welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Now, I am really looking forward to this one. Today's guest is a performance coach and physio, specializing in recovery optimization and sleep. From training the likes of Anthony Joshua to F1's Lance Stroll, CEOs of big companies and entertainment artists such as Oasis. I'll also mention he's a former Team GB snowboard physio too. It's Rob Madden.
Rob, hey, Amy.
How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Now, this is quite surreal because I think you gave me my first ever physio.
I was thinking about that as we organised this, yeah. 2010, was it?
In Lax.
That's making me feel old, but you were like that big, yeah. Was it Lax or Calgary?
I think it was Lax.
Maybe Lax, yeah, because I met you before Calgary. But
because
yeah.
You were already hanging out with the main team then, and I was just on the junior team.
That's right. You were tiny and you were just like ripping rails. And
I was like, my shoulders are falling off. Can you help me? And you're like,
hi, Rob.
It's okay. Yeah. You're going to be all right.
Yeah, I do remember that. If that was 2010, how old were you then? 13, maybe?
16.
16, right. Okay.
16.
Okay, so you weren't too young. Yeah.
No, not too young. Performance coach and physio. What does your day-to-day entail?
I have my business with Doug, my colleague who's an osteopath, and essentially across three pillars, I suppose. We manage a whole heap of different clients, athletes, general population, face-to-face in London. And then we have online programs and educational programs for other coaches and physios as well. And a bit of a kind of concierge thing, because after sort of nearly 20 years in the industry, you end up connecting people to doctors, trainers, people in LA, people in America, whatever it is. So in health, as you know, it's a lot about having a good network of people around you that you can rely on.
It's incredible how important that is when you're an athlete. But in fact, in everyday life, everybody needs that support network.
Yeah.
I think the last time I saw you, I mean, you've gone from strength to strength since being
best.
A Team GB snowboard physio.
Yeah.
Was on a British Airways flight about a month before my second Olympics, and you were off to go snowboarding and treat Lance Stroll.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's been a bit of a random career, really. When I finished my degree, I was like you guys, I just love snowboarding. So I was in my university accommodation writing letters to Burton Snowboards. Ride. Hi, I'm a physio. Just pay for my flights. You don't have to pay me any money. I just want to snowboard and work with snowboarders, right? And it was a bit of a fantasy. That's all. And then I got connected to what was Leo Addington at the time. And I said, look, I know this is a bit random. I've only just qualified, but I just love snowboarding and you don't have to pay me. Just pay for my flights and I just really want to do it. And he offered me the job and I worked hard and I loved working with you guys. It was back then, it was, you know, Leslie, Dan Wakeham, Dom Harrington, all those guys. And Jamie.
Legends of GB snowboarding.
Yeah, the absolute legends, yeah. And then obviously I worked with Canada for a while, worked with Mark and Seb, that was great. And then, yeah, just skipped around different sports, ended up in F1 2017 with Lance. And Lance was an absolute legend. I mean, we had a lot of fun together. We obviously worked hard. I trained him for 6-7 years with other practitioners as well. But yeah, it was a class gig. Like, got to take me to backcountry snowboarding and do all this amazing stuff.
It's surreal, really, because you wouldn't associate working in Formula One with backcountry snowboarding.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know what? These guys are adrenaline junkies, right? Just like you guys. And, you know, Lewis Hamilton loves to shred, doesn't he? So
he can do a backflip.
Yeah, huh? I was quite impressed with that video he put up.
I mean, let's just say he did hit his head pretty much on the takeoff.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Not the best start to the
Ferrari
career, giving yourself a big
Lewis
concussion.
Hamilton here on the Monday Mile.
You know what? He's got techers, though, you've got to say. And Lance rips as well. I mean, he's been riding really hard for the last 5 years in the off-season. I probably he's riding very calmly
very
in the backcountry.
We're probably not allowed that in their contract.
Exactly.
You've treated some of the top athletes in the world, from the likes of Anthony Joshua, Mark McMorris, Lance Stroll. What's been your biggest learning that you've taken into your life now?
Great question. I mean, I suppose I would start with saying that perfection doesn't exist for the best athletes in the world that have, as you alluded to earlier, a strong support team, chefs, nutritionists, multiple coaches, etc., psychologists. You know, they're striving to be better every day, but it's impossible to be perfect every day. And it's also impossible to stick to a plan and nail it throughout the year. So you've got to be able to adapt and cope under stress, under challenge. You know, Mark, remember when Mark broke his rib before the Olympics? AJ's had some wins, AJ's had some losses. Sport is like life, there's highs and lows. These guys are constantly under pressure to turn up and look for that perfection, look for that best performance. But actually, the reality is that often they have to accept that they might be under the weather, they might be underslept, and they've still got to perform, they've still got to train. So I suppose I've taken that into my own life in the sense that I strive for balance and I strive to do better, but I'm never trying to look to live a perfect life because it can be quite stressful if you're trying to attain that.
How do you remove that pressure of perfectionism? Because there is so much almost pressure to live well nowadays. It's almost like a trend. Yeah.
This is a great chat. I feel like post-lockdown as well, in a good sense, the world has evolved their priority around health. However, it can be a bit much. Yeah. There's a lot of information on the internet. There's a lot of people doing podcasts on health, and people are talking about trying to get enough sleep, take the right supplements, get in the sauna, get in the ice bath, do your breath work, do your journaling. And it can feel, I think, to the consumer, quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then you add wearable tech. We can maybe spend some time talking about wearable technology, but you add that in and it can feel a bit like you've not got control. You know, the technology is dictating how you feel and what you need to be doing. Don't get me wrong, there's the movement towards knowing more. People understand more about supplements, creatine, caffeine, L-theanine. You're like, people weren't talking about this 10 years ago, but people are interested in it and people are more educated. So it is good, but I think it comes with that pressure, like you say, to feel like you need to tick off loads of boxes day to day.
When it comes to wearable tech, I mean, I'm guilty for it myself. I've never tracked my sleep. But having a device on you, something digital, overnight, and then being accountable to that, surely that's not good for your mental health.
The thing with wearable tech is everyone's different. Everyone will cope with that technology and that data in different ways. So it's almost like prior to commencing using wearable technology, you need to have the right personality. You know, if someone's mildly autistic with OCD, it's probably a nightmare to give it to them. Honestly, my summary on this area, and it's a complex one, we could talk about it for an hour, you and I, because it's really interesting, but my summary is definitely use it. Use it to educate yourself about how food influences your sleep. What does alcohol do to you? You know, what happens when you train late in the day versus early in the day? Lots of variables can give you this understanding of your body.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need to be permanent. You know, use it as a tool to learn more. And this is the challenge with Whoop. Whoop is on your wrist all the time. And we're then accountable to this external validation of saying, oh, your recovery is suboptimal today. You know, take it easy. And you might have a training session planned. So what happened in the 70s? What was George Best doing? He's just getting up and like with a hangover and playing football.
And so, let's say, to make it relatable to Joe Bloggs, it's the day of a marathon. It's the London Marathon. You wake up and your device is telling you to take it easy. How is that going to mentally affect your performance?
100%. I couldn't agree more. And this is what I always said to athletes that are using them all the time before major events like an Olympic Games, a world title fight. You can't be wearing that thing, you know? It's no chance.
It's actually almost scary how it could derail your performance.
Yeah, massively, massively. There was actually, because obviously Rory McIlroy's got the affiliation with Whoop, and there was an interview he did at an event last year, I think it was, where he said, I just wasn't feeling my best. I didn't feel like I could perform. My Whoop said this, my Whoop said that. So it was really interesting. He was expressing how he was feeling, but it was like almost like the technology led him to get into that mindset. And I don't know him, so I can't talk about him. But yeah, it's just interesting to observe how, yeah, like you say, the technology can kind of almost govern you. Yeah, exactly.
Get in the head.
Exactly. I think one real asset is illness and tracking health and wellness and illness day to day. Like, okay, if you've got someone with a low HRV, body temp's up, energy's low, they're feeling a bit run down, you're able to kind of build all that data and the subjective feedback to say, look, you're probably getting a cold or you're under the weather, we need to take a few days off.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's the good side of wearable tech. But
I think this information would be useful to me. So I'm the opposite. I'm one of those people that constantly wants to keep striving and keep pushing. And some days I will admit defeat and just be like, I'm exhausted, it's okay, I'm just going to run 2 miles, not 10. That's an extreme example.
You go by feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do tap into how I feel, but maybe the wearable tech in that instance would give me that justification.
Yes.
Of why I feel like that.
Yeah, exactly. But your hyper awareness as an athlete helps, and that comes from years of training and knowing where you're at. And that, I think, again, is another way where wearable technology can educate someone to assess how they're feeling.
Yeah.
But also look at the data. If you get the double, you might actually get the opposite, right? So you might wake up and you might have had a really stressful evening and you wake up and you feel slightly tired, slightly run down, but your data says you're good. So then it's a bit like, you know what, that cortisol response you had last night has stressed you out and made you feel a bit subpar, but you're actually fine. So, okay, cool. You might want to not thrash it today, but go and do a 30-minute zone 2 run followed by a sauna and you'll probably feel amazing. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think I want to get in more on the wearable tech. I think it could be good.
Get a little insight.
Yeah. Maybe I'm going to turn into like an incredible runner overnight because my device has told me today's the day to smash it. No more excuses.
Exactly.
No more 2 mile runs
get
for
it
me.
Done. Get it done. Stop mucking around.
When it comes to sleep, again, with these devices, I'm going to use my mum as an example. She's got a Fitbit and she'll wake up and she'll be like, oh, I've had a really good sleep. How important is the 8-hour sort of terminology that's bandied around? It's a little bit like you must walk 10,000 steps a day. You must sleep 8 hours. How true is that for day-to-day performance?
Yeah, it's a big question. I guess we have to think about it in terms of age as well. And then what we would call sleep need.
Yeah.
And that's going to vary day to day, but depending on how hard someone's pushing. So if you're a professional athlete, 25 years old, your sleep need is likely to be in the kind of 8 to 10 hour range. If you're a 40-year-old guy like myself who trains maybe 3-4 hours a week, can run quite well 6.5-7.
Okay.
You know, and I know that's my sweet spot. I haven't slept for 8-9 hours for a long time, unless I'm really tired. So actually, 8 hours isn't necessary. If we're talking about sort of longevity and health, you don't have to get 8 hours a day. If you're somewhere between 6.5 and 8 and looking after yourself, then you're okay. It's where we start to go sub 6, sub 5 hours consistently, month to month. So people running off 4 hours and loads of caffeine, you're starting to see, well, there's maybe some long-term health implications with that.
That's definitely enlightened me, because I'm one of those people that thinks that I need X amount of hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Whereas my best friend, she has this sort of motto, just get up and get on with it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think I could maybe like, oh, well, I shouldn't do that because I haven't slept enough.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because again, it's a trend. People are talking about sleep. If you only have a 6-hour window to sleep, how would you make sure that that sleep is optimal?
To lead what's ideal, we need to think about firstly a schedule and consistency.
Okay.
So if you are running off mostly having a 6-hour sleep most days, then the first thing, first and foremost, would be within a 30-minute range, have a consistent bedtime and wake time.
Okay.
And then in terms of pre-bed, and this is another interesting one to debate with you. People are going to be on their phones, right? People are going to watch a bit of TV. That's okay, a little in moderation, but
there's another addiction there.
There you go.
For the majority of society.
Yeah, I mean, how can we not be? Because our entire day is based off of our phones and our laptops and multiple modes of communication, WhatsApp, Instagram messages, voice notes, wherever it's coming from.
Sensory overload.
And the micro dopamine hits constantly, right? So, and then if we start thinking about multitasking, you've got the TV on, the laptop's open, you're editing a video, and then you're on the phone at the same time.
Yeah, I can do all those three things.
Yeah, especially because you're a woman, right? We call men are useless at it. But, and that, you're thinking about what's happening to your nervous system, right? So it's not ideal. And look, the reality is people are gonna look at their phones and laptops in the evening, and some days are going to be bad. Other days might be a bit better. So again, it's going back to my earlier point about perfection and balance. It's unrealistic for me to have a professional athlete and say, okay, put your phone in a box at 8 p.m. No looking at the TV. I want you to meditate for 2 hours. Yeah, come on, it's never going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So the reality might be, okay, look, if you're going to watch TV, you know, try not to look at your phone at the same time. try to maybe just do one thing that's actually winding you down. Don't wind your nervous system up, you know, replying to emails, yeah, whatever it is.
Those micro dopamine hits, how do they affect our body before we sleep?
If you kind of simplify it, the circadian rhythm is based off of two major hormones that are fluctuating throughout the day. So cortisol and melatonin. So when we go to bed, we want melatonin to be nice and high. We want cortisol to be low. When we wake up, we want our melatonin to halt as quickly as possible. And actually, sunlight is good at doing that. It's a really good way of naturally reducing our melatonin and getting a healthy spike in cortisol. Cortisol gets termed as a very bad thing.
Yeah, it's a negative thing. I always associate it negatively.
It's actually not. Cortisol is what we run off. We need it to survive. We need it to, like, you and I have a heightened cortisol right now, but it's not negative.
Yeah.
We're walking, that's raising our cortisol. We're having a stimulating conversation, it's raising our cortisol. It doesn't mean we're stressed. When you train, your cortisol is going to go up. So to go back to your question, dopamine feeds the cortisol and that sympathetic response, right? And if you think about society, you look around, unfortunately, there's a lot of kids vaping. They're walking around with the vapes in their mouth like all the time, and they're on TikTok. Dopamine is just running up and down all day.
And if we're to stay in that constant state, surely that's got to have a negative effect on our health long term.
For sure. We'll find out more and more in the long term, because this time we're living in is very different to what it was 20 years ago.
When it comes to those dopamine hits, how do they negatively affect our sleep?
Well, dopamine is, as we know, it creates an element of positive mood lifting.
Yeah.
It's closely affiliated with serotonin. We become reliant on dopamine the more and more we have it. The scary thing is, actually, if you talk about a little bit of a sidestep, but
yeah,
if we look at vaping, the spike and the crash from a vape is quite similar to crack cocaine.
No.
Obviously not the same amplitude. It doesn't create the same high.
That's
that crack
quite
does.
Scary.
Yeah, so this is the thing. And you actually observe, like, you know, 14-year-old kids with pineapple-flavoured vapes in their mouth, and it's in there all day for hours. And we don't have the long-term data on how that's going to affect their nervous system, how it's going to affect their lungs. And I don't want to have like an anti-vape rant, right? I'm sure there's probably a lot of listeners that have like got a vape in their mouth, but
yeah, I know a few.
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting to think about just purely from a chemical perspective. I'm not trying to say, hey, everyone stop vaping. That's just not my business. But it is playing havoc with our dopamine on top of social media and everything else. We're just kind of, we're really like relying on these micro hits to keep energized, and at the same time probably reducing our attention span as we do it, because everything's like 10-20 seconds.
So how can we further increase our attention span and create a constant flow of energy without these micro spikes?
What an amazing question that is. It's like the question of life. Single task focus.
Okay, so this podcast does not facilitate that, because it's walking and talking.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, no, in that sense, that is the single task, is the cognitive task is us speaking.
Yeah.
And there's a positive overlap with a physical task. So I'm all for that. And actually, when I'm coaching, I try to encourage, especially people that might need to lose weight, I'm always encouraging them to take like meetings on the go, walking. And sometimes just being able to pull back and not think is good as well. Like if you want to create a bit of creative loop in your brain, obviously. I think for me, and again, I'm not standing here saying, as I said, I'm not perfect by any means. And I've just got a small sauna for home. And my goal with that is no phone, put some music on, like old school, play the album from start to finish and just chill.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's really important to me.
I love that. Why are saunas so the thing to do?
I think that's actually a really positive trend. We know from the research that saunas are great for recovery. They're great for the immune system.
Yeah.
There's probably some benefits long-term for cardiovascular health. We get beneficial anabolic spikes. We get a reduction in cortisol. By doing that, we get better sleep. So there's lots of good health benefits to using it.
I love a sauna. I'm not such a fan of the ice bath.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, look, the ice bath thing is obviously the last 5-10 years, it's been a big, big thing. Everyone's doing it. It doesn't mean to say everyone has to do it, but there are obviously different benefits to ice baths. And there's a lot of debate going on around what it's doing to our system. But well, we can go down that route if you want. But I think if you're saunering regularly and sleeping enough, then that's a pretty damn good start to your overall Like recovery?
Overall recovery and wellness. You also specialise in recovery optimization. The word recovery, saunas, ice baths, how important is recovery to grow? Because I'm one of those people, I like to just keep going and keep going until I can't anymore to a degree. And there's different types of rest. So I would call my rest active recovery.
Yeah.
A 3 mile walk.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's been positive over the last few years is people understand pulling back is beneficial. And I think wearable technology's played its role in that, with athletes understanding that, okay, if you've been pushing hard for 3-4 weeks, micro deloading, and when I say that, I mean having a sort of mini break of 3 to 4 days of relative rest. However, still doing zone 1-2 is fine, walking, swimming, sauna, but coming away from that harder training is critical to allow super adaptation, to allow someone to actually progress, get stronger, get fitter, peak for an event.
And when we're talking about zone 1 and zone 2, what actually are those markers? Because a lot of people will be listening to this podcast, unless they're massively attuned to a device, maybe won't know what the different zones are.
Yeah, no worries. A quick, easy one for listeners on that would be 220 minus your age.
Yeah.
And then times that by about 70%.
Okay, so let's do it for me. 220 minus 33.
Yep.
No, oh, minus your age. Okay.
Yeah, so 187 is your technical max heart rate. However, because you're a former professional athlete. Do I still call you an athlete?
Yeah. Love that.
Current professional athlete.
No, former. Definitely. It was like 7 years ago,
Rob. Yeah. Former athlete. So your peak heart rate hopefully should be up in around the mid 190s. I'd like to think you're a bit higher than 187.
Oh, God, no pressure. Next time I go to Barry's, better whack it up to level 14 on the old running.
So let's figure out your rough zone 2 here. Get the old calculator out. So we want to really be floating around the 130 mark.
Okay,
so people might say, oh, that's a pain, I haven't got a heart rate monitor. What's an easy subjective way to understand if you're in zone 2 is if you can just about hold a conversation.
So essentially a really light jog.
A light jog, exactly. So you do want to increase the heart rate and increase the respiratory rate somewhat, but you want to be able to hold a conversation. That's a pretty good indicator that you're in that state.
So when looking at state of general wellness, if I was to train hard 4 days a week and have 2 to 3 days operating within that zone 2, would that be a good place to start?
That's great. I mean, I wouldn't put someone there to start necessarily.
What would you recommend for somebody that works 5 days a week in an office in a relatively high stress role?
Okay. If they're sort of starting from fresh again, they might have trained a bit in the past, but they've had a bit of time off.
Yeah.
I'd do a really simple traffic light system throughout the week and go for 5 days on, or even probably if they were just starting from nothing, 4 days on, 3 off.
Yeah.
I'd educate them around red, yellow and green traffic light system so that they understand, okay, green zone 2, conversational type cardio, red is blowing hard or actually lifting heavy weight. So you don't have to be out of breath to be in a heightened state of intensity, right?
Yeah.
So if you're doing a heavy deadlift or pulling heavy weights, that is going to put you in a state of red training as well. So across the week, I might say, look, start your week on a Monday with a bit of a red day. You know, it's a good way to kind of energize the system, give yourself a big sympathetic stimulus, give yourself a big anabolic stimulus on a Monday, start the week right, drop it back off on a Tuesday with if they're starting from fresh, maybe it's a long walk, maybe a light jog. Wednesday might be amber, you might hit some Pilates, but you know, dynamic. Thursday,
Pilates falls into amber.
Depends on the intensity, right? It's between
yellow
and
green.
I find
Pilates so hard.
So you put it as a red,
would you? I put it as a red.
Yeah.
I'd rather run half a marathon than do a Pilates class.
But is it red mentally or physically?
Probably mentally.
Yeah.
Look, I think... It hurts the glutes a lot.
For sure. And Pilates is great. I mean, I don't coach it, but I really respect it as an area. And I think for athletes, it's really great. Thursday, pick it back up with another red one, whether that's high intensity run or a good weight session. Friday might be another zone 2. And then the weekend, chill, recover. And that would be a sort of easy way to help them understand. And the challenge people have, if they've got a goal in mind, like they want to lose weight or they want to train for a marathon, is they'll come out of the blocks in red.
Yeah.
And or red and yellow all week. And they'll cope with that, but you might get 2-3 weeks in and actually just crash, get sick or get tired, because you actually haven't tapped into that green zone enough.
What tools would you use to implement that consistency so you don't fail at the first week of reds?
Good communication, a good plan that they're able to follow, and accountability. So checking in with them, making sure that they stick into the plan and not overdoing it. And a classic example here would be someone's done 3 days of the program and they say, oh, yesterday was a bit easy, I wanted to do more. And you say, well, that's great that your energy was good, but it's deliberate that we're pulling back to allow them then
to
on
go.
The Thursday to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
They do that extra bit on the Wednesday because they feel good. And then Thursday session's compromised.
Yeah. It's a funny one, that, because so often as a former athlete, I would turn up to an exercise class. And if the instructor happens to know that I was an athlete, they instantaneously want to thrash you. I do some form of movement, meditative or non-meditative, most days, whether it's a walk, whether it's the gym.
Yeah.
I don't want to smash myself.
Yeah.
So isn't it funny that there's this perception in society that every time we go to the gym, we've got to thrash our bodies?
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas I think a massively important part of it is thinking about it as nurturing your body and fixing your body in 100%. Many instances.
I love this topic that you've raised, and it's a good one for coaches to reflect on and clients as well. But actually, it comes down to the coach asking you, where are you at? What did you do yesterday? And what's your goal for the session, right? Simple.
Yeah.
And actually, if that coach isn't coming with those questions, then it's good for you to be on the front foot and saying, hey, look, I pushed myself really hard yesterday. I feel great, but I'm keen to just recharge the batteries a bit. I'm going to stretch. I'm going to move. I'm going to do some zone two. I'm going to hit the sauna and breathe so I can push again the following day, right? And that's your really high knowledge because of your professional sports background. But the more the general population can understand that, thrashing yourself every single day will only lead to eventual breakdown.
What's your routine like, Rob? Because I know life has changed a bit since you treated me when I was an athlete.
Yeah.
You've now got some little ones, as well as a full-time job in the city.
Yeah.
How do you create your own optimal lifestyle?
I would say at the moment it's suboptimal because I've got a lot going on with business. However, I make it a massive priority to train more for my head than anything else, but I don't have any sort of big, massive ultra marathon events planned, but I enjoy golf for the mind and the body. I really enjoy it socially as well. So I try to build my week around some good strength and conditioning, a high intensity run, one zone two run, two runs, three lifts, and then a session of golf in the winter. I'll just do some coaching, have some lessons. But in the summer, obviously, I get out, and I love that ability to go out, get some zone two, hit some balls, catch up with a mate. And for me this year, because the diary is so nuts, I'm being really anal about diarising sessions and putting them in as like really serious meetings. So it's like
non-negotiables.
Yeah, exactly. And then if something changes or emergency comes up, client needs me, I'll still move that training session to another gap. So it's always in the diary.
Yeah.
Especially with high intensity running, which I said to myself as I get up towards 40 this year, I need to do more zone 4-5. So I've forced it in the diary. So
why is that you need to do more with age?
For me, I appreciate that I'm cardiovascularly not as optimal as I could be. And it's more from a health perspective, long-term, longevity, overall health. If I can improve my cardiovascular health, it's going to be a good thing for me long-term. It's also going to allow me to eat a little bit of sugar here and there, which I quite like.
I noticed you ordered a black coffee today. Is there a reason for that?
That's just my preference. My cutoff time is about probably 10, 11 a.m.
Yeah.
Everyone's different. Everyone has different amounts of CYAP2, which is an enzyme. So that's why you might have friends that can have espresso after dinner and sleep fine, whereas other people's ability to metabolize caffeine is not as good. So I'm pretty sensitive. I can have a lot of caffeine, but it needs to be early in the day.
That's the same as me.
Yeah. So you've probably got a lower amount of that.
Smashed three coffees before 11
today.
But it was because I was on the bike doing my zone two heart rate session.
There you go.
I wouldn't have even known it was zone two.
Awesome.
I've learned something there. But I was consciously aware of the fact that I sat between 130 and 150.
Perfect. Okay, amazing.
Maybe a little bit
so,
higher.
So somewhere
maybe
between
a little bit higher
zone
a couple
two
of times.
Three, yeah, great. That's awesome.
You've traveled the world with your profession, that albeit work, snowboarding, various Formula One races. What's been your biggest learning from traveling on the road and managing that well? Because for me, the minute things get busy and the travel gets heightened and you're going from place to place, it's very hard to sort of stick to any form of routine.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's a challenge, and trying to stick to a fairly consistent nutrition schedule is always helpful. It's not easy if you're rocking up at a really nice hotel that's got a buffet, right?
Oh man, I'm a nightmare with the buffet. I like my food,
exactly.
Rob. It's a disaster.
It's a nightmare for sure. Yeah, one thing I'm really conscious of is when I come back from a big trip, if it's a long haul, I've done a maybe 10, 11 hour flight, is trying to keep that first day or two a bit easier, not overload myself with work. If possible, in the past, I was just always just pushing. And I got burnt out quite a bit from that, I think.
Yeah, burnout is real when the travel starts and gets intense.
Exactly, yeah.
And Rob, we are on the Monday Mile podcast, so we like to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday. Do you like a Monday?
I think I've actually evolved it over the years, like growing up, going to school and then university. I think Mondays become really, they're a chore, right?
Yeah.
And so I've tried to shift my mindset as well that Mondays are good. And also that Sunday doesn't feel dreaded because you're kind of not looking forward to Monday. Actually, Sunday's still like a really nice day to have and enjoy the weekend. I try to stay optimistic about Monday for sure, yeah.
And on those days that you maybe didn't enjoy a Monday so much, do you have any tools that you can share with our listeners to help them get up and be inspired to start their week?
Lots of caffeine, drum and bass and sugar.
No. Boom! And just like that, we're sorted.
To answer the question seriously, I would say if they're struggling with energy and low moods, the best thing they can do is get outside, get some sunlight, albeit in the UK is not always easy, get some sunlight to the back of the eyes, take a walk, clear the mind, get off your phone, simple. That is really what I would
recommend.
Do
you have any tips for helping people to get off their phone? Because the addiction is real, let's be
honest. For sure, absolutely. Just leave it back at the office.
We're going to leave it. I'm going to chuck mine right here. Gone.
There you go. Someone's going to grab that ring. King's Cross, don't forget. Give it 30 seconds.
Top tip from a performance specialist, chuck your phone into the mud in King's Cross. Throw it there and somebody will steal it.
I actually
think it may cause more stress losing it though. However,
for sure.
In this instance.
For sure.
Lastly, Rob, do you have a life motto or quote that you live by that you can share with our listeners?
Consistency is king.
Oh, that is like so boring, but it's so true.
Yeah, it is really boring, but I'm on about it all the time with people because if they can just get into a groove and be consistent, it's going to make everything a lot easier.
What is your biggest constant?
Sleep. People that know me, like when we had like weekends away with mates and they're all drinking at 1 a.m, I'm in bed at like half 11.
Gone.
I got a lot of stick for it over the years.
Okay, you've influenced me in my decision-making process for tonight.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the car booked for 10:30 for pickup.
Exactly.
Monday Mile listeners, you heard it right here. Sleep should be constant. Get your sleep in.
That's it. Longevity.
You know what to do. Make sure you are subscribed. The audio drops every single Monday morning at 12 a.m. for the early risers. Rob, thank you so, so much. That was so insightful.
Good to see you.
I absolutely loved it. Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. Woo!